Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in the studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good day to you.
Wesley Wildman.
And good morning.
And Chris Woodward. Good morning, Chris.
Hello. Thank you.
It is Wednesday, August 19th. And folks, you have 1 week before my birthday is here. My birthday is 1 week from today. All I'm asking
it's like year
for,
round.
All I'm asking for are your prayers. That's all I'm asking for. No, I'm just kidding. I do want your prayers. So I'm just teasing. I obviously do not expect. I don't expect my friends and coworkers here to do anything special for my birthday. Why should today be any different?
And you left out the year there, but 2026. But if you're still writing 2025 on your checks, you know, at this point, just keep doing it. At this point, you know, if it takes a couple of weeks, maybe even a month, and you're still writing.
Oh yeah.
The year of the previous year.
You know what? I gotta be honest. I've written one check this year.
Oh, okay.
And that was for my first visit from our air conditioning folks.
Yes.
And I thought they, you know, everybody now comes to work, you know, do work at your house, and they just take your debit card.
Yeah,
they have a little device. Well, they didn't. So they said, we take check or cash. And
wow.
I said, well, I don't have the cash for that. So I wrote a check.
And you got the year right?
Oh yeah,
okay, good.
But it's weird, kind of weird remembering how to write yeah. out the amount in words.
Pass, yeah.
You know,
what do I do?
Yeah,
what is this for?
But don't give them a blank check and tell them to fill it out for you, though.
No,
don't do that.
No.
A new thing is Venmo. I had a guy come and do some work outside.
I don't think that's that new.
In our hard, well, a newer thing. Because and I was expecting to just pay this guy in cash, and he was like, just Venmo me.
Yeah.
I was not expecting to hear that from you, sir.
You're getting up into the older bracket of people.
Yeah, I told him to get off my lawn.
Yeah. That you invited him to.
Yeah. Younger people are all just do this, use Apple Pay, just do that. And mm-hmm. and I just go, I don't think I trust it. And that's just an old person talking. Yeah. So anyway, it is Wednesday, we're going to hit the news. We had our story meeting this morning.
We're hitting it hard.
We're going to hit it hard because there is stuff going on.
There sure is. Let's begin with Florida, where they had a primary yesterday for all kinds of seats. And when it comes to the gubernatorial race or the governor's race, we have former Democrat turned Republican Byron Donalds squaring off this November with a former Republican-turned-Democrat David Jolly in a race for governor. The winner of the November race will replace Ron DeSantis, a Republican governor who's been there 2 terms and unfortunately is term limited. Here is Byron Donalds talking to media and praising or talking up Ron DeSantis to the media after his win. Clip one.
As a Republican Party, we have set the standard here in Florida. Ron DeSantis has done a great job as governor, and it's about mm-hmm. keeping the wins that he's brought to our state going forward, but also building for our future, making sure that we can balance the growth with our agricultural lands and our conservation areas, because Florida is the best state in America, and we're not going to stop anytime soon.
Well, listen, Fred, there's a lot of high hopes for Byron Donalds if he wins and becomes governor of Florida. He's only 47 years old. He could become a leading figure in the Republican Party.
Yep.
You got conservative credentials. Mm-hmm. He is a black conservative. Mm-hmm. That is probably he's not unique in that way in the Republican Party, but if you're going to draw more from the black community to the Republican Party, it helps to have a conservative black voice touting conservative ideas.
Exactly. And I think all Byron Donalds has to do is say, I'm going to continue on and do what Ron DeSantis has done.
Right.
If he says that, he's going to have a good night on election night. That's where he is. I mean, when you follow up with a governor who has done as well as DeSantis has done, that, you know, Florida's cooking.
Yeah.
It's cooking. You know, you've got New Yorkers that are streaming down the East Coast to get away from Mom Donnie in right. New York City, et cetera, et cetera. DeSantis, very sharp. Byron Donalds, very sharp. I think he'll have a good night in November. It's kind of interesting. Chris mentioned the Democrat challenger there is going to be David Jolly, who was a Republican who turned Democrat. And he is going to try to convince, in his speech, he tried to say, I'm pretty conservative too. I'm just going to read a little portion of what he had to say last night. He said he embraces capitalism and a lean government, but one that needs to do its part to fill the gaps such as education and housing. He calls himself an old school Republican. So what he had to say last night is shaping up what that campaign is going to be, is that I'm not one of these, Jolly's going to say, I'm not one of these DSA people.
Right.
Although we are going to talk about what happened last night with one DSA candidate that's going to run for U.S. Senate. So Florida's going to be really interesting to watch on election night. But you're going to have two people, Byron Donalds and David Jolly. You're going to have two people that are going to sound similar in economic policy, celebrate capitalism, et cetera, et cetera. So Jolly, I think, is going to move further and further to the center and, you know, with a few caveats in there to make him sound like a Democrat. But Byron Donalds, I think, is just going to say, I'm going to continue on with what Ron DeSantis has been doing the last several years.
Well, and Wesley, Byron Donalds is going to also say Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's going to say Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. And in Florida, that is going to be, those are two very popular names. To me, I would guess, as your dad says, if I were a betting man, this race is Byron Donalds to lose. But he's pretty politically savvy. I think even though Jolly is trying to sound almost like a Republican, I think those two names, Trump and DeSantis, are pretty potent stuff in that state.
It is, and I'm a little more familiar with Byron Donalds the last couple of days, knowing that this story was going to come up. Did you realize, it was new information for me, but he grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And so I'm wondering how much of his experience with a very deep blue state and a really deep blue city, how much that has impacted his worldview.
Because he was a Democrat, right?
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. He was a Democrat. And,
that's
right. You know, you get that sometimes. John Fetterman, the senator from Pennsylvania, he's made noises and sounds like it wouldn't take much to push him over the edge and either declare himself independent or maybe even become a Republican simply because of the whacked out ideas that he's trying to, you know, put out like a fire that's spreading in the Democratic Party. So that's a good point. Who knows whether his experiences up in New York
has shaped his.
Yeah.
He also seems to be, from what I'm reading, seems to be really good on education, kids' education, public school education, and wanting to make that a priority for him. And we've talked about this yesterday on the program, just how bad, how far our education has, in not all districts, not all schools, but overall, the education is watered down and almost non-existence and just pushing kids through in a lot of these big cities. And this is and he seems to be making a big deal that that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You talk about Byron Donalds.
Byron Donalds.
Yeah, his wife works for one of the education watchdogs. So I would be surprised if she didn't have some sort of education platform as a future First Lady of Florida,
sure.
Should he be elected this November. Now, it's very important that everybody pay attention to Florida and Ohio this year, because if those states end up electing Democrats to be governor or for the Senate and stuff like that, that I think spells doom for a J.D. Vance or a Marco Rubio should they decide to run for president in 2028, because their home states, which they would need to win to get to the White House, have flipped politically. So these things are important, even though you might live in Mississippi like we do, or some other state. Everybody right. should pay attention to and care about the direction of states. And I use that to segue into this segment for the show. A Democratic Socialist candidate by the name of Angie Dixon is running for Senate in Florida.
Nixon, I think.
Yeah, excuse me. Thank you. I had it wrong on my sheet here. Angie Nixon is the Democratic Socialist candidate, and she is running in Florida here. So let's hear a little bit from the DSA. Angie Nixon, to clip two.
People are demanding change. They are tired of the billionaire and corporations running this country. They are ready for hardworking, everyday people to get to decide what their economies and communities look like.
very, very. She took a page out of the El Sayed playbook there, or yeah. Bernie Sanders, or.
Well, Fred, this we're going to hear a lot of this kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and not just this year, but going forward, this is going to be. And frankly, the reason why I think some of these DSA backed candidates, when we're folks, we mean the Democratic Socialists of America, it's an organization that promotes candidates. The reason they're having some success is that there are a lot of people out there that that are feeling economically left behind.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to be susceptible to this kind of messaging and other messages that the DSA candidates are rolling out.
Yeah, I think a couple of things, as I think Chris was just pointing out, what happened in Florida last night with regards to this particular race for U.S. Senate is a pretty well a carbon copy of what happened in Michigan. The Democrat that was running against Angie Nixon was well-liked, was endorsed by the Democrat Party, and spent, he had $16 million in his coffers. Angie Nixon had less than $1 million, all right? But she still won. And she won, I think, because for the same reasons that Abdul El-Sayed won in Michigan, tapping into mainly young people. We've talked about this before. Abdul El-Sayed, when he had his rallies up in Michigan, you saw a bunch of young people, university people, a lot of white females who have bought into the socialist way of, you know, that philosophy. It was really interesting. Alex Vindman, who was her opponent last night in that Democrat primary, they thought the party establishment thought he was a shoo-in.
And he was the establishment candidate.
He was the establishment candidate. I think the only other thing to watch, I obviously didn't look in on the Ashley Moody celebration on her side of things last night, but I think she's doing a happy dance this morning.
Yeah.
You're going to have Ashley Moody, who was appointed by Ron DeSantis when Marco Rubio was appointed Secretary of State.
Right.
They needed somebody to fill Marco Rubio's shoes. Ashley Moody was moved into that, former Attorney General, very popular in Florida.
Yeah.
And she's done a great job up in Washington. So she's going to be completing that stay, Marco Rubio's stay. So I think... I would be totally shocked if Ashley Moody doesn't have a fairly easy walk in this.
Because the establishment candidate for the Democrats, who Angie Nixon beat, Alexander Vindman, you mentioned, he's a former Army intelligence officer.
Yes,
you have somebody who served in the military. That's yes. always. A really good part of your credentials if you're in a state like Florida or Texas, that's the kind of person that could have been a little bit more trouble for a Republican like Ashley Moody.
And Nixon, I'll tell you, she's every bit the Abdul El-Sayed playbook, DSA playbook.
Mm.
Does Florida really want that?
And no.
She does not like Israel, accusing Israel of genocide. There's a fairly large Jewish population in Florida, especially in...
And Cuban population.
And Cuban and Venezuelan.
Doesn't like socialists.
I know. So
I think she picked the wrong state, but that's my opinion.
It's going to be interesting to see what the party does with her.
Yeah, that's the conversation.
Do you want to start writing checks now for her campaign?
Yeah.
Because remember, this was a Democrat primary.
Yeah.
A Democrat primary is very different from a statewide election for a U.S. senator. So we'll keep an eye on this. But if I was a betting man, she's got an uphill climb.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wesley, this is another case in which the Democratic Party establishment, this is, I'm looking at an article from The Guardian that calls this an upset. This is an upset win for Angie Nixon over the establishment candidate. This is becoming a pattern inside the Democratic Party. I think going forward, this, we talked about it, but more and more we see evidence this is a real
civil war
inside the Democratic Party, and who knows who's going to ultimately win.
Yeah, and this is these types of stories that lead me to believe that it's giving the Republicans a little more cushion.
Yeah.
a little more cushion because they have their own problems right now. There are not a lot, but there are a few things that as a Republican, when you voted for Trump, that you were expecting to get that you're not getting right now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that would otherwise be the top story for, except for you're having several DSAs winning. And then now the Democrats, like you said, have to decide pretty quickly how much they're going to go against them versus give them room, because there is money in play here. I mean, because for the mass of the Democrats that give to the Democratic Party, that money gets delegated out to DSAs, unless they get involved in that, and that's where the civil war becomes.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an excellent point. The Republicans do get some cushion here. I guess we'll wait and see whether that dissipates. But going forward, the Republican Party, because after this election, Fred,
we turned the corner.
We turned the corner, and we're looking at the last 2 years of Donald Trump's administration. Mm-hmm. He can't run again.
Yeah.
Then you start turning to, okay, well, who is going to succeed Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
What is the message going to be?
Mm-hmm.
What are the policies going to be?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a fight over how many, are we going to go back to wars? We're still in a war in Iran. What are we going to do to bring down the price of everything, which is one of the messages that got Donald Trump elected in 2024. A lot of stuff going on here. And to Wesley's point, the victory of these radical DSA agents may, agents, I feel like they're agents, secret agents. It really does cloud the picture for the Democrats and give the Republicans some breathing room. What do they do with it?
Well, I think what the Democrats are trying to do right now, and if you watch Fox and some of these other programs, they invite Democrats on to, and they're always asked, the Democrats, you know, what about your DSA candidate? You know, how can you support this guy? Is it a detriment to your party? And they tried to deflect right away. They it's really interesting to watch. They go to their set of talking points right away.
Yeah.
They do not want to talk about Abdul El-Sayed, and they don't want to talk about Ms. Nixon, Angie Nixon, down there in Florida.
Because these candidates are popular with young people.
Exactly.
The Democrats can't say anything that's going to drive those voters away.
Exactly. So they can't. And, as was said, Haley Stevens in Michigan, she came right away. She was running against Abdul. I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to campaign for him. I'm sure Vitamin, if he hasn't said it already, will say, I'm going to help Nixon get.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter, because the Republicans are just going to point, and they don't have to exaggerate.
Right.
Republicans do not have to exaggerate how radical these people are. And the reality is, these people, the DSA people, have found a home in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is a reason for that, because the Democratic Party has been moving in their direction.
Yes.
All right.
Starting with the 2020 race.
Yes.
When they got Bernie Sanders to step aside for Joe Biden, I'm guessing promises were made to this side of the party.
Yeah. Now, for the Republicans, the Achilles heel continues to be Iran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've got to decide. The president has to decide pretty soon what he's going to do to take that off the table. Because if we're still there and the Iranians are still putting out mines and blowing ships up, and they got the Houthis involved and, you know, their proxies that are involved. If all of that is still going on near Election Day, that's going to be a problem.
Yep.
And the prices of gas and groceries have got to start coming down.
And stay down.
The American people have to see that.
And I'm not sure there's enough time. Frankly, we're here. I mentioned August 19th. Mm. We are less than 3 months away, 2.5 months or whatever from the midterms. I'm not sure there's enough time, even if we got out of Iran right now, for the voters' minds to change.
And I got depressing viewpoints on this, or cynical. I think if we were going to pull out, we would have already done it. I think, unfortunately, he's going to get this one wrong, continue to get this one, he meaning the President Trump and his administration. I think they're going to continue to get this one wrong, unfortunately. But it goes back to, if the DSAs weren't involved in the Democratic Party and winning, then I think it would be a pretty big blow because of the war to the Republican Party. I think it'll be a little closer now because of that. I think it kind of offset itself a little bit from a political standpoint.
Yeah. So. Well, and let me just say this one last thing, and you guys can, you know, tell me what you guys think. As we move past the midterms, I was talking earlier about the Republicans have some decisions to make. If you're going to run for president, I think the war has been very, polling is clear, very unpopular amongst even Trump supporters.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got to be careful because President Trump is still hugely popular amongst Republicans and especially MAGA. Okay, so if you're a J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, whoever else is going to throw their hat in the ring, Fred, I'll toss it to you first. You've got to decide, what am I going to say about forever wars? And do I criticize President Trump? Because then you risk the ire. Then you've got your kind of a mirror problem with the Democrats. You can't afford to anger your ground troops, which right now are MAGA voters. You can't alienate them, just like the Democratic Party establishment can't alienate young voters who support socialists.
The ball is in President Trump's court. He has to make that decision on Iran. It will be a mistake if a decision is not made and we get ever closer to 28.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe that the president has to make a decision before Labor Day.
Yeah.
That's a new deadline.
Yes. No, seriously. Well, how many weeks? Is that 2 weeks away?
Yeah, a couple of weeks away.
Two and a half.
You have to come out and say, we are now satisfied that they don't have a nuclear capability.
Mm-hmm.
We are satisfied. Mm-hmm. Our intelligence tells us we've stung them badly on that front. We are going to continue, and I would suggest an announcement about some kind of international force, Saudis, Qataris, getting together with the United States to ensure that there is passage through the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
Then you're going to see gas prices go down. Gas prices go down, groceries follow that. But that has to be done, I believe, in September, say Labor Day. But I think he has to make that decision, because if he doesn't, and this continues to drag on, this becomes a real liability for 2028.
Yeah.
If you leave it up to the candidate for 2028, whether it's the vice president or whether it's Marco Rubio or somebody else, you leave it up to them to decide, that is going to be a problem for
2028. That puts them in a pickle.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. So he needs to clean up the mess, President Trump, to make it clean for whoever's ever going to run.
Because Marco Rubio, let's say it's Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance, even if they start to say, well, we're going to stop with the forever wars, I'm just using it as a label, the media will question them.
Mm-hmm.
So do you disagree with what President Trump did? Mm. And now you're having to dance.
Yes.
And you don't, like you said, you want that to be cleaned up before folks have to declare for 2028.
Yep.
All right, when we come back, Abraham Hamilton III will be on with us, and He's the host of the Hamilton Corner. And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Abe will be in the house.
Friend, we're living in a defining moment. Today, a woman facing an unexpected pregnancy can order the abortion pill online, often before anyone has the chance to tell her that she is loved, that she's not alone, or that there is hope. That's why you are needed right now. You are made for this moment. At Preborn Network Clinics, mothers are welcomed with compassion, practical support, and a free ultrasound. And when she sees her baby and hears that tiny heartbeat for the very first time, fear often gives way to hope. In fact, more than 80% of abortion-vulnerable women choose life after seeing their baby on an ultrasound at a Preborn Network clinic. That one moment can save a baby's life and open a mother's heart to the hope of Jesus Christ. This is our moment to stand for those who cannot speak for themselves. Just $28 provides one life-saving ultrasound. $140 helps rescue five babies. Please don't wait. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or give securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Together, we can save lives one heartbeat at a time.
Our help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. Psalm 121, verse 2.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Battagnano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. Joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Wesley Wildman and Chris, nephew of Bob Woodward.
Only when it gets me somebody on the phone.
You're not really related to
no,
Bob
I don't.
Woodward.
I don't think. Ironically, I do have a great uncle, I think, named Bob, but it's not that Bob.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not that. What about Bob?
Yeah.
And then Abraham Hamilton III is in studio with us, host of the Hamilton Corner, heard weekdays at 5 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio. Abe, this is the second week in a row you're in studio with us.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. All right. So we have a couple of kind of, I think, important legal stories to talk about. Otherwise, we wouldn't bring them up. Not that we're averse to talking about stuff that nobody cares about. We do that sometimes. So Chris set up the first story for us. So we want to talk a little bit about Meta.
Yes.
You better explain who that is.
Yes.
And then talk about the case. I think you have some sound, and then we'll get Abe's take on this.
Bob's wife.
Yeah.
It's Meta.
Yeah.
Meta.
All right. So Meta is the company that owns Facebook and Instagram and other social media apps. Mark Zuckerberg is the founder and the CEO of Meta, which again is the parent company of Facebook and Instagram. The reason we're talking about this is because yesterday in Oakland, California, in a federal court, a case brought by a bipartisan coalition of state attorneys general, they've taken Meta to court claiming that Meta has contributed to the addiction of young people on social media. And to make matters worse, the attorneys general, including Republican Attorney General Russell Coleman of Kentucky, say that Meta knew about the problem and didn't do anything about it. They may have actually taken steps to get kids more hooked on Facebook or Instagram, social media in general. I do have some audio here of Russell Coleman, again, a Republican, as part of this coalition, clip six.
We are going after the addiction machine that is TikTok, the preferred platform for predators that is Roblox or character AI. This is a narcissistic program that hurts our kids. Absolutely. We're going to go. We in law enforcement, we go to where the threats are. And social media is the threat to our kids. It's the opioid fight of our generation.
A lot of people have also compared this to something that happened in the 90s where states took on big tobacco and got a huge settlement. Penalties for this case could top over $1 trillion, but Coleman, Attorney General Rob Bonta of California, and others say they're really just trying to get Meta to change their policies.
Okay. So, Abe, I have no idea, really. I haven't polled the panel. I have not talked to you about this. I personally have a problem with using addiction language for problems that stem from a lack of accountability or responsibility. I don't know how to put it. While I am sympathetic to the frustration of parents and the fear, the anxiety the parents may feel about social media swallowing up their kids. So start with the legal angle here. If this is a wise or a wise approach, and then you're a pastor, you're a father, you know, how many kids you have?
Six kids.
Then tell us your pastoral parental view on these kind of issues.
Yeah. Oh man, I have lots of thoughts, and I think it should be pointed out that this lawsuit that's currently pending in Oakland follows the previous lawsuit earlier this year, where the young lady's acronyms were used as a plaintiff, KGM, first name is Kaylee, where she sued initially TikTok, Snapchat, Meta, and Google for YouTube for personal injury, for mental distress, body dysmorphia, and other things. And she won $4.2 million in combined compensatory and punitive damages from Meta and $1.8 million from YouTube. And there's another lawsuit.
She won?
She won, yes. Mm-hmm. And she's 20 years old at the time of the lawsuit. But the allegations, based on her own testimonies, that she started using social media when she was 6 years old, spending hours and hours and hours on social media, using the features, using the filters to hide her insecurities and all of these things. While I am, as you mentioned, I'm a parent. I live in this world. We're fighting tech beasts like everybody else. But I'm very concerned about what you said, using litigation to address an accountability issue. I have a problem with a child that's 6 years old being allowed to be on social media for hours a day.
Right.
And then when she's negatively affected by it, the parents end up getting a financial windfall and not dealing with the accountability aspects of it. I do believe that, you know, being in the free market as a corporation, you should employ responsibilities, you should do certain things. And I do believe that these companies are a bit different from like Roblox and other places, which, you know, my children are not allowed to use Roblox.
Right.
Because having learned about the things that they do, I'll go a little bit further. My children don't have cell phones,
yeah, right,
which I've said before that it's not a phone. It's a pocket rocket supercomputer.
Yeah.
You know, that most people don't even use to call. And so the thing I'm concerned about is this is indicative of our accountability-less society, to where when we have problems, we're looking for somebody external to blame and then want to be compensated for it instead of, you know, not letting our six-year-old scroll for hours on social media.
Am I oversimplifying it when I say it feels to me like this is criminalizing the word addiction, because you could slap this on anything, because there, if there's a criminal activity done on social media, if you send a death threat, that's you're going to get in trouble for that. But how can you, I just don't see how you can criminalize someone who is willfully doing something that they know that their actions in and of themselves is not criminal.
Yeah. Well this, it's civil, okay. So it's not yeah, criminal, okay. So money is civil. Only going on the table.
Okay, I guess.
You know, and so the main distinctions, criminal issues deal with if you're in violation, you lose your liberty, you know, freedom. Mm-hmm. Civil is money damages. And I do think there's space to require corporations to operate responsibly. If you know these things exist, you know, are you creating your product to retain attention and to do all of these different things? I do think fail safes need to be put in place to protect children. I agree with that. But you know what the primary God-ordained fail safe is to protect children? Parents.
Right.
Yeah.
Parents. I don't think corporations should be allowed to run wild and be irresponsible. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But where is the accountability for us? I'm concerned that this is rewarding it. And because of the KGM lawsuit, there are lawsuits all over the country right now over this.
Hmm.
You know, to the and AG Bonta is saying, oh, we don't really want $1.4 trillion in damages. We'll probably end up around $200 billion. But this is one case.
Yes.
And there are thousands of cases pending all over the country.
Let me put this in boomer terms, okay? So some of the baby boomers will understand exactly what you guys are saying about parents being the first stopgap. So when I was probably 4 years old, maybe, my parents, my mom, caught me chasing my sisters around, well, one sister at that time, around the house with a hammer because I'd seen it on the Three Stooges. Okay, I'm dead serious. Nyuk, 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 nyuk. I'm running, you know, with a hammer to hit my, because I saw them hit each other with hammers and you know, nobody got hurt. Mm-hmm. My parents banned me from watching the Three Stooges. They said, well, this is negatively affecting our idiot son who's chasing his sister with a hammer.
At 18 years old. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
So they banned me from watching it, and because parents are responsible. What would have happened if they turned around and sued whoever, I forget who produced the Three Stooges, and said, well, it's your fault. Because my son learned the wrong lesson.
That's the concern I have with this, is that where does this stop if you redefine or add to the simple definition of addiction? I mean, because I can't stop going back to the popcorn machine, because that salt on there tastes really good, but yeah. I keep going back. But like at some point, I can stop, but I can't hide behind addiction.
Maybe you have a case against Orville Redenbacher.
I'm considering it. For that kind of money.
Yeah. In the KGM case, she sued because she said the social media companies and YouTube caused her personal injury, including body dysmorphia and thoughts of self-harm. That's what she argued, and she was compensated for that. And that's what these attorney generals are doing. And again, don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm not – if you know, Meta and others have evidence that this isn't addictive, they need to put various things in place. But I think it's a little bit disingenuous to say, well, we're not really here for money. We really want Meta to make changes.
Yeah.
Well, then why are you suing for money if you want them just to make changes?
Right.
Why not work with them to implement the changes that you think need to be made? Instead of saying, hey, by the way, we're going to have this coalition of 29 attorneys generals.
Yeah.
And we all want to get our forks into a small pot of $200 billion.
Yeah. All right. Let's go. Before we don't want to keep Abe the whole time. Let's throw this second story his way.
In other news, ABC has taken the rare step of suing the Federal Communications Commission on First Amendment grounds, saying the FCC's demand for early review of its broadcast licenses pose an existential threat to the network. A little bit of background here. The Trump administration doesn't like how it's been treated by ABC. It doesn't like what some people on ABC are saying. And as a result of that, the FCC, which has people appointed by President Trump and other presidents on the FCC, the FCC is saying, hey, we're going to consider pulling your broadcast license. So what do you think about ABC's claim that this is a threat?
So, Abe, how is this different? You know, we complained about the Biden administration weaponizing the federal government.
We did more than complain. We sued them.
Yeah. So are we wrong to – I can't believe I'm saying this. Are we wrong? I don't know what everyone else thinks. Am I wrong to say I'm siding with ABC on this one?
Well, this is where you have to distinguish public relations from the actual core of the investigation, because Disney is attempting to say this is a First Amendment issue. But if you actually look into what the FCC is looking into, they are querying Disney concerning their DEI policies that they've been operating within over a year. Mm. They're not doing anything concerning the First Amendment. It has nothing to do from the FCC side, to do with content regulation.
It has is that right?
That's exactly right. That's why it's like Disney has lawyers that are very smart, and they know that they can win a PR campaign by saying that this is nothing more than a First Amendment challenge, or this is a veiled effort to crush us because of viewpoint discrimination, things of that nature. While they represent kind of absurd things like saying The View is a news program, a hard news program, really. but the query, and I'm not, you know, I'm a constitutionalist. I'm not a big government. You know, I'm suspicious of government action generally. That's my disposition. And I maintain that suspicion now, but I think it's disingenuous for Disney to say that what what the FCC is attempting is to cause them to change the content of their broadcast.
All right, so what is the core of the investigation slash challenge?
Yes, the core of the investigation is because federal law under the Trump administration made changes concerning DEI policies, and for the previous year, there were allegations that Disney has been violating that in terms of their inner workings and how they're operating internally as a corporation. And the FCC is seeking to review that before they renew their licenses.
Okay.
Now, again, there still could be some untoward things going on, but it's a little bit of bait and switch in terms of what's happening in the public discourse, because Disney, I think, shrewdly so is trying to say, they just don't like what we say. The Trump administration just doesn't like us. They don't like what we say. This has nothing to do with anything else. When the FCC is like, you've completely mischaracterized what we're doing here. We're saying you guys have been violating federal law in terms of your internal DEI operations in violations of federal law.
Okay, so let me just ask one additional thing, and then we'll let you go. And this is why we have you on, to help us work through these legal issues. So when you say the DEI, are you talking about the policies in terms of hiring slapping a muzzle on people who work at ABC and don't want to be forced to say X, Y, or Z?
The latter. Yes, okay. Absolutely right. The latter. Those who don't want to be compelled to convey certain messages because the bosses are saying that we have to satisfy this various quota and all these other kind of things. That's what the FCC is querying. Now, you could still make some challenges and questions on that front, but it's disingenuous to say that the query that the FCC is involved in is specifically concerning the First Amendment freedoms. That's not what's on the table at all.
That's good. That is good to know. That is helpful information. Abe, before we let you go, anything you want to let your listeners know in advance, stuff you're going to be covering?
Not necessarily. I'm going to dig in a little bit more on these Meta lawsuits, because there was another case in New Mexico where a $576 million verdict was rendered.
These are huge numbers, man.
And a little behind-the-scenes information. I hate to say this, but this is true. A lot of this is driven by plaintiffs' attorneys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Looking for big wins. Like in the KGM case, Snapchat and TikTok settled out of court. People don't talk about that.
Yeah.
So the $4.2 million jury award and the $1.8 million jury award are in addition to what was already settled for out of court with Snapchat and TikTok. And so that kind of thing has led the floodgates to be opened, and now you have plaintiffs' attorneys that kind of sense chum in the water, and they're trying to get their portion of these billion-dollar corporations. Mm-hmm.
I have a quick question. So in addition to this trial that just kicked off yesterday in Oakland, in the near future, there is a film coming out called The Social Reckoning, which follows Facebook engineer Frances Hogan as she teams up with a Wall Street Journal reporter to leak internal documents that aim to show senior leadership ignored platform harms to teen mental health and fueled political violence. Mm-hmm. So at a time this is playing out in public court, the court of public opinion is going to get the Meta is bad movie from Hollywood. Does that...
I'm sure it's all coincidental, Chris.
Yes. Yeah. Does that run the risk of influencing the judge, who is an Obama appointee, by the way?
To act as if judges are not human beings and not subject to societal pressures is to ignore the reality of the human condition.
Yeah.
Those things will have an impact. How much of an impact? Mm-hmm. It remains to be seen. And it is true that judges are supposed to be, you know, objective and not swayed by external pressures. But it would be a bit naive to suggest there's not somebody out there that would be willing to say, yes, these evil big corporations, including those that are like these social media corporations that's hooking all of our children on this addictive social media, which gives a convenient out from parents, unfortunately, to say, I probably should do something different than allow my child to sit 6 hours a day scrolling with the infinite scroll.
I agree.
Again, not dismissing responsibility. You have evidence that you know this is addictive. You need to make adjustments. You need to make internal controls. But I think a worse communication, in my estimation, is that it's allowing an expansion of the unfettered lack of accountability that's rife in our society.
Okay.
I know we need to wrap this up, but I still have the marketing. I went to business school. The whole idea is to try to get people's attention. So yeah. I don't understand how there can be any legal, but apparently there are. But I just don't think there should be. I don't think you should punish. And I think it should be on the parents saying that particular. Let's use one Instagram. That as an example. That one is more addicted than these. Therefore, this one's excluded. And this one, the parents should be navigating through that. Obviously, individually, I'm with you. There's none. My kids are 10 and under, mm-hmm. so that's not an option. But you get the idea. Yeah. I'm having a hard time legally seeing that this is being a thing.
Because advertising,
it's the whole
what's
point.
The difference between this and advertising?
Yeah, and it's like advertising just gets you to use the product. They're arguing now since they're using the product, you're causing people to be addicted to your product. And that's the loaded term they're using, addicted to the product. And there's some indications that some of these companies were aware of some of these things that were happening.
Okay.
They either they were not forthcoming about them. They did not explain them properly. And all of that is legitimate, worth being challenging and questioning. But I still think we're missing a huge component. You know, if you're going to have a negligence case, there's a concept called contributory negligence that would minimize the type of damage recovery you can get. Because if I sue you for being negligent, but you can show, yeah, but I was negligent too, that's going to reduce the scope of what I will recover in the event that the negligence combined end up harming me. See what I'm saying?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Personal responsibility is what I like.
it's just unfortunate, but that we're at this place. I think it's a bigger problem, bigger than what the social media companies are doing. It's a bigger problem that we have parents that are allowing children to be on devices for.
I think some parents are afraid of the confrontation with their kids once they have opened that barn door and the horse has escaped. I'm mixing metaphors.
Probably so, but again, that's a problem that precedes the other things.
By the way, breaking news: after saying on the air that he was kind of understanding where ABC was come from, Ed has been invited to co-host The View tomorrow with Whoopi.
Well, hey, that's a hard news.
We'll have audio on Friday, T.I.
That's a hard news show. We'd love to host the hard news View. All right, Abe, before we think of something else to ask you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being on.
See ya.
Well, folks, that's why we have specialists on the program sometimes to help the lay person to sift through some of these issues. So make sure you listen to Abraham Hamilton III, host of the Hamilton Corner. You can hear him today at 5 p.m. Central Time, and then tomorrow and Friday, every weekday, you can listen to Abe. We're blessed to have him.
Yes.
All right, next story. We still have a few minutes here in your segment.
This one may actually result in a conversation that carries past the break, so do stick around, listeners. Just as Democrats have a problem with Democratic socialists, the Republican Party may want to have a conversation with the people advising Senator Darlene Graham. She was appointed to fill in for her brother after he passed away unexpectedly, how many ever weeks ago. And last night, during a debate with other Republicans that want to fill his seat in the long term, Darlene Graham was asked this question about national security. Clip 14.
Senator, are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? If so, why?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Are Taiwan and the South China Sea national security issues for the United States? And if so, why or how?
I'm just going to be honest here. I'm not on national security. I'm not that informed on national security. So, but I do support the military.
Hey, Fred.
Oh.
Now listen, I'm sure her name's Darlene, right?
Darlene Graham.
You don't have to do this. We know she's a good person.
Okay.
I'm just going to be honest.
That may be one of the worst answers I've ever heard in a debate. She's done.
Yeah.
There's no recovering from that.
I don't know how you recover from that.
I just found out about this morning, and I was sitting in my chair like at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I winced.
6 a.m.
Yeah, 6 a.m.
Did you have to play it back?
Well.
Like, wait a minute.
No, I read it first. And then Chris found the audio of this.
That's worse, having to read that.
And, you know, Joe Biden came to mind.
Yeah.
You know, it was a Joe Biden moment.
Yeah.
And here you are. Bless her heart.
Yes.
She's a nice lady. She really is. she was appointed to that, President Trump, after Lindsey Graham, her brother, died suddenly.
Yeah.
She was appointed to that, you know.
It's a way to honor Lindsey Graham.
To honor her. The story is compelling. He helped bring her up, you know. All of it's a wonderful story,
yeah.
Family story. And then the governor of South Carolina appointed her to fill in.
Yeah, rest of his term.
Because Lindsey Graham had won the earlier nomination.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm trying to think, what about her handlers? Normally people who are going to debates are practice a bit.
Yeah.
And she was around Lindsey Graham. National security was his bivouac.
Yeah.
And to come up and say at the debate, I'm really not up on this.
For Taiwan, that's a major issue.
I know it was a bad night. It's a bad response. It likely will cost her greatly.
Yeah.
If that's not on a campaign ad today, Ralph Norman's people have done it wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, it will be. Yeah.
Listen, this is going to be one of those moments that people replay for years to come. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.